Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, and I am so excited to have Jessica here with us today. Jessica, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. My name is Jessica Perenni. I am a somatic trauma-informed coach, a psych nurse practitioner, and a brain spotting provider. I own my own company called It Ends With You, LLC, where I work with people, mostly a lot of women, on overcoming a lot of the things that I'm going to be actually talking about in my own story today.
It's so great to have you here. So let's hear your story to and through survival mode.
Sure. So I like to joke and say that I've been in survival mode since I came out of the womb, which is partially true. But what I wanted to narrow in on today kind of comes in two segments of my life. And I think it would be unfair to talk about one without talking about the other, because one leads into the other. So the first one being my childhood survival mode. So there's a lot of truth coming out of the womb, probably being in survival mode. I had been a child of divorce, and the primary parent that I was left with suffered with addictive behaviors. Therefore, you know, my sibling and I grew up in an environment with a lot of uncertainty, a lot of reactive, you know, reactionary emotions from my primary parent, walking on eggshells a lot, not really knowing what to expect. And so, you know, did we have a roof over our head and food in our bellies? Yes, but there was a lot in the environment that we weren't receiving, which is, you know, emotional support, emotional regulation, and co-regulation with your primary caregiver, which would then helps you to self-regulate your own emotions. So there was a lot of nurturing that we weren't really receiving, which led to me having extreme forms of codependency, which is one of the platforms that I talk about, right? And codependency, not necessarily needing to be around people all the time, but how I look at codependency is finding our self-worth in things that are outside of us. And there's a lot of the behaviors of codependency that are grounded in control. So the survival mode for me as a child was really finding control anywhere that I could to make me feel good about myself, safe, secure, and that I could predict what was going to happen, right? And because my home environment was so unpredictable, I needed that state of control in all these different arenas so that I could move through the world, essentially. Like, children are very resilient. And so how this manifested for me is I was highly perfectionistic. I would be freaking out if I got less than an A at school. I was a good girl. I was a quiet girl, right? I was kind of maybe a teacher's pet. And that's how I got my attention and my nurturing, was by being good and compliant and achievements outside of myself to give me a sense of self-worth. And so obviously these things just don't stop in childhood and then we become well-adjusted adults. And what that kind of took me on was attracting people throughout my life that would reinforce these wounds of not feeling enough or needing to prove myself. So out of my childhood and the trauma that had, had laid the groundwork essentially for me as a human being, led me into the next part of what I'm going to talk about is mostly the bulk of my trauma, which was more recent, was being in a narcissistic and a domestically abusive relationship. Now, if I, in my old self, I would, right, this old, like, kind of bully within me would say, well, this is my job. I knew I struggled with codependency. I knew I had toxic people around me. Like, why was I drawn to this relationship? And this thing about narcissistic abuse is it's really a slow burn, especially when you are with a covert narcissist. So, someone who acts one way in public and then is another way behind closed doors. So, because I had been used to this sort of unconditional, high, low, toxic love from what I learned from my parents, right? Inconsistent love. It was almost a natural segue of being vulnerable to someone who had also had learned to fill their childhood wounds in different ways. And so the thing about codependency and narcissism is that we are mirror images to each other. So the wounds that I had in feeling not enough and feeling unworthy and unlovable, the person that I had ended up with also had those same wounds, but how people with narcissism use other people to fill those wounds is in a more manipulative and coercive way. All that's to say is that I was a perfect candidate because of how I grew up for someone who could see that vulnerability in me and then exploit it for their own benefit. And then we get caught in this constant, like this like toxic kind of love cycle of being trauma bonded, so chemically addicted to this person. And when I had first met this person, a lot of the things that they were essentially mirroring in me were things that, that I loved about myself. Like I would say, oh, I want to travel and oh, I care about mental health and I care about, I like to read and I like, and they, oh, me too, me too, me too, me too. Right. Because if someone like this, a toxic person who is on the very high end of the spectrum of being toxic, led with all of the things that they were going to do wrong and abusive towards you, you would get the hell out of there as soon as they introduce themselves. So I had found myself with all the knowledge I had and a lot of therapy and healing stuck in this toxic dynamic that I couldn't make sense of. There were days that I would wake up that I didn't even like this person, but I couldn't understand the hold that this person had on me. And I also didn't like who I was with this person. And so when you start Googling the term narcissism, that's your first fucking red flag that you're in a situation that you should not be in. But I needed to find a way to make sense of my experience because there was so much that wasn't making sense. And when we had met, I was this really, as confident as I could be in my healing journey. And I had a lot of things going for me. And halfway through that relationship, I was stripped so much of my identity. And it's the small, little, insidious ways that he broke me down, right? Through gaslighting, telling me I was feeling a feeling that I was not feeling. He would say things like, you're always fucking angry. And I would say, and I'm like, I don't think I'm angry. But the gaslighting and this confusion of your reality mixed with, silent treatmenting me for sometimes days in a row of just leaving me on read, or even when we had lived together, just pretending like I wasn't there, with coercive control of making me feel like I didn't have a true choice in the decisions about what we did, where we went. And there was this slow deterioration of it's like being psychologically waterboarded daily. And unless you have interacted with a person like this, and this could be a partner, a sibling, a parent, a friend, a boss, that no matter what you do, you can't win with them. It really takes a toll on your psyche, and there's psychological damage and the way that your brain rewires to be with somebody like this. So I knew I was in a situation that I didn't know how to get out of. No matter what I was Googling and learning and teaching myself, I felt trapped. I felt suicidal. I felt like I had nothing left. And it was all a repetition almost of the same ways that I had felt in childhood when I was feeling really desperate for love and attention. And there was a lot of strategy by this person to keep me there and to keep me stuck. And when you're so broken down, you don't even feel like you have the oomph to leave. You're so confused about what's going on and what's real and what's not real that you don't know, you don't know your ass from your elbow is a common little joke phrase that when you're so in this psychological warfare that I had lost all hope. And I am not to boast, I'm a pretty intelligent person. And when I started lying to my friends or pretending like I was okay when I wasn't, I would have this narrative of like, you're a smart person. Why are you stuck or why are you so weak? And it's because this is a relationship unlike any other. But and so the psychological and mental abuse of, the name calling and convincing me that I did things or that I was feeling things that I didn't think I was thinking, doing, or feeling all eventually escalated to a lot of reactive abuse where he was poking the bear, and he knew enough about me intimately, right, in the happy phase. He's taking inventory, right? Was taking inventory on some things that were really hurtful and painful to me that I had been through, and then would use those as a way to remind me of those things, sit me in those wounds of feeling not heard or not valued or not seen as a way to subdue me. And when the reactive abuse and I was behaving and like, having outbursts or screaming or slamming doors and doing behaviors that were just so not in alignment with who I am as a person, took me so out of my element. And as the reactive abuse escalated, it turned, physical him towards me. And that's when I knew that either he was going to kill me in this relationship or I was going to kill myself in this relationship. And so the survival mode had to break at that point, one way or another. And that's kind of what, all in a nutshell, with a lot of rambling and twists and turns, how my childhood essentially led me to being in an abusive relationship, which then was the only way to heal was to hit absolute rock bottom.
So, what did healing look like for you?
So initially, healing was very, very messy. It when I the amount of times that I had packed up his clothes and asked him to leave and begged his family to get him out of our apartment, and I was asking for help. And it was through kind of the last few months of us being together after me Googling, right, narcissism and trying to understand reactive abuse and what the hell I was in, because it made no logical sense. Like, you can't find logic and rational anything with somebody who's not logical or rational. So I had actually fallen onto this woman from the UK. Her name's Caroline Strawson, and she had a podcast about narcissism. And I was listening to that every single day, like multiple times a day, as a way to reality test myself. So while he was still in the apartment, I was doing things to try to educate myself on what the hell this was that I was even experiencing and finding ways to start to pull back to me and put up boundaries and not be reactive and to not feed into this, the narratives and the abuse that he was pulling me into, that the cycle that he was pulling me into. And so when he had finally left, and his leaving was also a way to get me to subdue because he thought that I would beg him to come back. It was the most painful experience of my life, despite knowing it wasn't that I loved him and I didn't want to be with him. It was me sitting in my wounds of feeling not enough and feeling broken and feeling unlovable. It took me right back to all of the childhood shit that had not been healed in any sort of effective way. Talk therapy does not heal these things. I could talk about my trauma all day, every
All
day,
day and
all day.
re-traumatize myself, but
Yes, exactly. So, out of actually, when he finally moved out, the relief I felt in my body and the pain that I was in was It was a scary, scary place. It was very dark. I was still extremely suicidal because I was sitting in all of those wounds of all the stuff that I had not healed effectively over the years because we don't talk about how to heal these things effectively. So from there, I actually ended up reaching out to Caroline herself and being a part of her trauma coaching certification. That's how I am where I am today. And I took a part in her mastermind. We did some one-to-one healing because she had gotten out of a narcissistic abusive marriage. And so this is where, right, your post-traumatic growth comes into play, where your pain can then be turned into your passion. And really, out of that, it's been about 4 or 5 years, and the healing road has been very messy and convoluted and 10 steps forward and 20 steps back, because that's how healing is. But I'm happy to say now I'm in such a different place in my life because of doing somatic work. So working with the body where those wounds are stuck and where you can't release them just by talking about them. So I've done a lot of somatic work, brain spotting. I'm a brain spotting provider myself, ways to release trapped trauma from the lower and subconscious parts of your brain. And also finding community of other people, specifically women, who have been in these scenarios, because again, it's not like any other relationship unless you've been in it. This sounds like pure fuck madness. It just sounds like pure chaos of, well, why wouldn't you leave? Like, this is incredibly toxic. What do you mean this person bad mouths you and calls you a bitch and tells you that you can't do anything on your own? And it's because you're already trauma bonded. You're literally chemically addicted to this person, even if you don't like them. And so when you're coming out of situations like this, community is so important because you need other people to be able to reality test you, to give you language about what you're experiencing, and to also share in those experiences because they might be a few steps ahead of you in the healing process. So that's really what took me to today.
Thank you for sharing. And I believe so heavily in community, right? One of the reasons why I started this podcast is we create community by sharing our stories. And
Absolutely.
one thing about trauma, it keeps us silent, right?
Yes.
Inherently. So to be able to hear someone else's experience oftentimes is like aha moment. I remember listening to something about narcissism and I, unaware. Like I had been in several abusive relationships, right? And although I recognized what was going on in this one particular relationship, I couldn't put my finger on it. It wasn't the same as everything else that I had experienced, right? But that gaslighting, the trauma bonding, which is the part that I didn't understand, right? Like the way we connected, it felt so magical. It felt like everything I needed in that moment until the ball dropped. And then I realized it was everything that I needed to avoid.
But for many, I mean, especially just for people like me that was the pattern that I was used to in childhood, right? It feels familiar. You're like, well, this is what love feels like, or this is what relationships feel like, because that is how you've been conditioned to understand relationships. So and then we romanticize this shit in TV shows, right? Like the show You or whatever, that's romanticizing these shitty guys, and it's under the guise of love and of like devotion and I'm so passionate about you. And but that's it's not healthy. But we don't talk about what we talk about more, I think, or have access to more what is unhealthy under this like facade that it's healthy when it's not, rather than talking about what safe and healthy relationships are. But if it's familiar, your body's going to choose that every time. Your nervous system will
Every time.
choose familiar chaos over unfamiliar calm. So you're right, when you do first meet, it's like this whirlwind. When really, now that I'm outside of it, I'm like, well, he was just mirroring everything that I like about myself. There was nothing, he was chameleoning to me. Actually, I really liked myself at the end of the day. But yeah, it's a
It's
totally different
definitely an
experience.
interesting dynamic, right? And I think for me, once the penny dropped, and like I started really learning. Okay, let me dig into this
Yes.
and
I become an
like
expert.
let me unpack all of this so I understand. And I remember when I left the that cycle that narcissists go through at that end when they are being discarded, right? And It was so textbook, everything that happened.
Yes,
I felt
yes.
like, oh my gosh, wow.
Yes.
Like, whoa.
Yes.
Everything that I had read about happened,
Yes.
and I was left not in awe. I was actually grateful because it was now I can't sweep this under the carpet. I can't
Right.
romanticize it. I can't
No.
justify
Right.
because this is like, it's so in my face that
Yes.
and then you're left having to pick up the pieces. I remember at the end of that relationship, I spent a lot of time angry, right? Because it
Oh,
was a
absolutely.
significant part of my life. That now I'm questioning everything because
Yes.
now I understand what I'm going through, right? And because
Yes.
now I understand trauma bonding and I realize like this isn't love, this
Right.
wasn't love. Like, what was I doing
Right.
all of this time? Like, all of these red flags that come
Yeah.
flooding in after which,
Yeah.
you know, they
Yep.
say
Yep.
hindsight's 20/20. Like, holy shit, how did I not see this? But I went into this relationship quite broken, even though
Yes.
I was on a healing journey at that time.
Yes.
I
Same.
was still
Well,
far from,
those wounds
yeah.
are still visible, and people, like, they sense that in you. And I just want to, the word narcissism is not to shame or blame someone. Narcissists are deeply, deeply wounded humans who find a way to get their needs met through manipulation of others. And that's where, again, narcissists and codependents are mirror images of each other, except narcissists cannot change. There's been no proof at any point in the past, now that this has been like a hot button word, right? And we don't just label everyone narcissist, but there's a lot more out there, wounded individuals that cannot heal, not will not, cannot heal. And it's so the word is really for victims to make sense of what the hell is going on, because it is not rational or logical in any way, shape, or form. And it is not normal compared to other relationships that you have had. And so I very much feel your story, because that's where I was. I'm like, I'm a smart woman. I do this for my job. Like, I've worked on my codependency. I get like where I'm at. How the fuck did, but it's because those wounds in me were still almost probably like a shining guiding light for people like that to, again, attract to me. And they attract people, and not just because there are female narcissists as well and non-gender conforming narcissists, but they attract others who are actually everything that they cannot be. So the things that they love about you in the beginning, your strength, your wisdom, your resiliency, your career choices, your charisma, like your sense of humor, are actually the things that they end up making you, they hate about you, and then they almost make you hate about you because they can never be that. So they're not attracting weak people. That it's not fun to attract a weak person and break them down. It's more fun and more of a game to attract somebody that seems really strong and secure in themselves and slowly start to strip away their sense of self and their sense of reality. And that sounds
Absolutely.
really fucking terrible and mean and evil, but sometimes on that end of the spectrum, they really are. There's a lot of hurt that has now turned into evil. So, and that's not to blame and shame. It's just to honor other victims who are still trying to make sense of what they're in or their scenario.
Absolutely. And
Yeah.
I love that you put it like that because I think oftentimes, I think I can't say often because I can't say that I know a lot of narcissists, but I'm going to speak to my experiences. I believe my
Sure.
father is a narcissist. I believe, you know, I was in a narcissistic abusive relationship. And there is this sense of victimhood that they hold on to quite heavily.
Yes.
And it's like, I'm not the problem. You are
Yeah.
creating this dynamic, which then is
Yeah.
creating stress for me,
Yeah.
which is now what I'm operating from. What the other thing that I enjoyed about hearing in your story is the reactive abuse, because I don't think we talk about that enough. Again,
Yeah.
being in that relationship, I found myself to be very reactive and defensive. So
Yes.
much so it trickled into other parts of my life. And without checking it, I found myself even after that relationship being highly reactive,
Yeah.
highly defensive. And I had to sit back and say, like, why are you why are you acting like this? Like, it will be
Yeah.
something very simple, like a joke. And I know it's a joke. Like, like this person is not coming from a bad space. I know it's a joke. And I'm immediately wanting to, like, defend, react and explain and, like, feel like, I had to take control because of the narrative that I thought was being presented because of the experiences that I had already been through with that person. And
Absolutely.
if you are not taking time and putting energy into healing after those type of relationships, I mean, it becomes a source of sabotage for everything else
Absolutely.
that you do because it changes, it absolutely changes you,
Yes.
at a
Yes.
core level.
Yes, narcissistic abuse literally changes the brain, the chemistry of your brain, and also of your nervous system and your vagus nerve. And I could get clinical about it, or I could not. But you were stuck, so you were stuck in a fight response when we're in a situation where if when you poke a bear so many times, we are animals at our core. The bear is going to eventually bite back. But then, as many of those times that we learn when we bite back, it just gets worse. So then you learn how to swallow it. And then it starts to get discharged. That energy doesn't just stay like in your body. It wants to get discharged eventually. So even when the relationship ends, you had touched a little bit on like there's hoovering tactics that come back. They're always trying to check in on you or find ways to keep control over you, even if that is just making you feel dysregulated in your body. Like it's been years, and my ex just tried to add my brother on Facebook. More than likely, knowing that my brother would say something to me and then it would cause me dysregulation. And it did not, because I've done enough healing to that he does not impact me anymore. But it's this post-separation abuse that continues that people also don't understand. This is not a normal breakup where you just like go on your merry way and you date other people and it's like cool and you close that chapter. There's pain in my body. There are things that I'm emotionally still working through energetically that I know that my body was in such a state of fight, flight, freeze, fight, flight, freeze. And it was a lot of freeze because I found that fight with him got me, physically abused. So you learn how to shut down and swallow all of that and how that affects your biology, your neurochemistry, your immune system, your endocrine system, your hormone system, especially for females, because all of that is so interconnected. It's interconnected for everybody, but we have more hormones than men. So how all of that, it's years later and I'm still unraveling pieces of how the post-separation abuse has affected and impacted me as a human being. And so I just want to like let anybody know if they're in that situation that it takes a long time to recover when you're in survival mode for that long. And it's not because you're not working hard enough or doing enough. Trust me, I do all of the work and I have to be patient with myself because when you are in survival mode to that depth, your body changes on a fundamental level and you have to work on but the hope is that you can rewire a lot of that. It just takes time.
I often talk about three steps to leave in survival mode or three phases. The first is self-awareness. We can't
Absolutely.
change what we can't
No,
see.
you can't.
The second one is reprogramming, right? What you were just talking about, you're having to rewire, like everything has to change. Like it's almost like you have a rebirth because it's you're rewriting all of the narratives. You are actually changing your perception, how you show up, how you operate. Like all of that has to change. And then the last phase is the reinvention, like being able to
Oh,
pack
I love that.
away the woman that you had to become in order to survive.
Yes.
Because that person, although she is still part of you, it's not that person is not going to help you thrive because of
No.
all of the coping mechanisms that she had to learn in order just to show up and live from day to day.
Absolutely. I think a lot of like where I've been recently is still finding forgiveness for her, for that version of me. Because when I look back, it's incredibly, I'm so unrecognizable. I don't know how I want to give my friends credit where credit is due that they stuck by like that because it was not me. It was so far from me. And I have to find a lot of forgiveness for her for I can't shame her and say, oh my God, you were so stupid. Why didn't you leave sooner? And you know, the night that he strangled me, he could have killed me. I had him locked out of the apartment and I had 911 pulled up on my phone. And the first thing I thought of was, I don't have marks on me. They're never going to believe me. And also, he did that because I broke something of his out of my reactive abuse. He hit something so deep and painful in me that he knew because he wasn't getting the response that he wanted. So, because I wasn't engaging, so the behavior and the abuse escalated to the point where he knew he had like a fucking ball in the basket as soon as what came out of his mouth. And I sat there and I have to forgive myself for that evening of not hitting and calling 911 and for lying. And for the things that and behaviors that I had had to, in some way, out of self-preservation and protect myself from all the shame that I was feeling. And those things have long-lasting impacts. And so I'm not going to say that the work never ends, but there are things that come up in my body now or things that I feel like I struggle with that I know it's because of the survival mode that I was in with that person for just a few years of my life. And how the survival mode from my childhood, it almost went into full steam ahead and it was a whole new level of survival mode. And you have to give your body time and you have to, you know, find a way to forgive your younger self for the things that you did that you would not do now or that you have, right, the knowledge and wherewithal.
Sorry.
No, don't be.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so much reprogramming that has to happen. And like you said, that grace, giving ourselves grace, because I mean, after months of doing the work and the facing ourselves and being honest, like the expectation is, sis, this shit's gotta work. Like something's gotta change,
Yeah,
right?
some's got to shift.
And when it doesn't happen overnight, it can be
No.
very stressful. It can be very, very frustrating. And it then leaves you feeling like, well, why can't you get your shit together? Why
Yeah.
can't you pull it together? Because you know you're ready to move on. You know you need to do the
Yep.
work in order to move
Yep.
forward. But like, I think it's very important that you say it. Like it's that grace, because like you said, 10 steps forward, 20 steps back, and then you pause, because it's
Yep.
like, I'm putting all this work, I'm felt all of this pain, I need to stop for a second. You know what
Yes,
I mean? Like,
exactly.
yeah.
Exactly. And the body needs time to catch up too, where a lot of the times, and in my own personal journey, there was so much like you can't change anything unless you're aware. And I feel like I've always been hyper aware, right? Because that came from childhood. I needed to be, my nervous system needed to be tuned up, volume up, so that I could watch what, you know, my parent was doing and know and anticipate how to react or behave or not react. And when it's turned up to a whole new level, it has taken a lot of time to get the body, like my mind, I'm mentally, I'm emotionally, I'm spiritually feel really, really good. And there are pieces where now there's like physical pain that comes up and there's like random physical symptoms that in ways that I can't feel like I can't move my body in ways that I could prior to that. And it's hard to not then be mad at yourself and blame yourself or be pissed at your body. Like, come on, like, right? Like, get it, pick up the pace. Like, I'm ready to be like, it's been, I don't want to give. And for me, yeah, I can only speak to my own experience. When I have these things come up that I feel like are remnants of that relationship, I almost get super pissed that there's still a piece of control that he has over me. And I really have to work with grace and reconciling that within myself and knowing that. Okay, yes, there's a fraction of that that might be true, but now I have the power to relinquish it.
We have
And
so much control over our lives when we are ready and able to take radical ownership. And I think
yes.
that's the beauty of really embracing the journey out of survival mode, because it really is taking radical ownership of your lives. Like many people that I've spoken to, many guests that have been on this podcast have spoken to the length of time that they were actually in survival mode, right?
Yeah.
So to then go from this place of, I was just surviving, to, I am now taking the bull by the horns. I am taking my life into my own hands. Like it's such a big decision to celebrate. It's like, yes, finally. But again, it's a journey.
It
It's a journey where you need elbow grease for the work. You have to be ready to pull up your sleeves and do the work. Jessica, I have really enjoyed this
Yes,
conversation.
likewise. You know, it's so interesting to who you're drawn to in life. And I think when you really start to do this work, right, you're energetically drawn to, and where my story could be, it's similar remnants of your own story. And this is how you find people that, right, that validate your experiences and that you can connect with on a deeper level. Through our pain
Absolutely.
comes connection.
And that's why this podcast exists, right? Like, I connect to you, you connect to the guests, we all connect with each other because this is something that, unless you've experienced it, you really don't know what's under the hood. Like, you really
No.
don't know that yearning for something different and being stuck, feeling stuck. So, Jessica, tell us how we can connect with you online.
Oh, I love that. So, the easiest thing where you can see lots of cats and concert pictures is my personal Instagram, because I use my personal Instagram for my business, because my business is me. So my handle is at Jessmo, Jessmo, whoa, Whoa, at Jessmo like whoa. And then my business website is www.itendswithyoullc.com. And on there and on my website, you will find all sorts of other little links on how to find me and a link tree. And I've written a chapter in a collaborative book with other survivors of narcissistic abuse, writing about our experiences. So I have a chapter called Lather, Rinse, Repeat Until You Don't, in a book called The Unseen Wounds of Women. So you can read a little bit in better detail than what I verbal vomited today about my story. But those are probably the top three, my link tree, my Instagram, and my website. If anybody wants to reach out and talk more about domestic abuse and narcissistic abuse and post-traumatic growth, because it's possible.
All of that information will be in the show notes. But before we wrap it all up, Jessica, one takeaway for the audience.
That it is never too late to heal and to start over. I know when you're coming out of these scenarios, it can seem really, really bleak. Like I said, I was in a very, very dark place, and it's hard for me to admit that, including, but you know, the work that I do, because you want to be a beacon of hope for other people. But I was in a very dark place, and I'm not saying that my brain sometimes doesn't go back there as a means of protection, but it's never too late to start over. I work with people of all ages. It's never too late to leave. It's never too late to choose yourself. And it's worth it. And you're worth
Listeners, I mean, you're
it.
here for a reason, and I just want to reiterate that, like, it's never too late. You can always take radical control of your life and change the trajectory at any time. Jessica, thank you so much for your
Thank you
time.
so much. It's been wonderful.
Yes, thank you. And listeners, thank you for catching another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.